Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
Welcome to the Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Mike Budenholzer is no longer head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks. You knew that already. It's been a few days and we've had a little time to ruminate and figure out what's coming next, what little we know about what's coming next. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Point Forward podcast. I am joined in-house by Jim Ozarski and Lori Nickel, Bucks reporters for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They know far more than I, so I'm going to let them cook and tell me what's going on here with the. I guess we're in the middle of a coaching search now. The Bucks will be in the market for the 17th coach in franchise history. The last one, all he did was go to the playoffs all five seasons, including one where they won the NBA championship. Three 1 seeds in there as well. He's got an impressive resume, but the decision made to move on. And we haven't talked about it. We got to go deep on it, Jim. And I want to start with it. First of all, you've written a couple things at jsonline.com already. One, you talked to John Horst, the general manager, and kind of gave his thoughts on the process. A couple things in there that kind of surprised me. I mean, a little bit was just kind of glossy, but still, like there were a couple things that I guess surprised me, and I'll talk about those. But then also, you sort of broke down what led to Mike Budenholzer's firing. You kind of broke it down a little bit from an analysis point of view. So, as you've had a couple days, so what, I guess like I'm looking for the central thing, and I'm sure there's more than one thing, but why this move was made, and sort of, especially with them not having somebody ready to go, like, what are they looking for that they didn't already have with Mike Budenholzer? And you've had a lot of time to think about it, so how would you approach those questions?
Yeah, so, well, in order to look for something, they had to get rid of the person who was in charge, and that's Mike Budenholzer, and look, I think there were the game 4 and 5 meltdowns from the Bucks. I think accelerated this. Mm. I asked John Horst flat out, did this start with you or did this start with ownership? And he said it's a collaborative decision.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he would have answered it any differently if it just started with him, but I do feel like the clock had been ticking on Mike Budenholzer since, frankly, the loss to Miami in the bubble.
Right.
And the reason I say that is because Mark Lazary was very out in the open at saying he went into the locker room in game 2 in Brooklyn in 2021. And the implication being if the Bucks don't get out of that, Mark Lazary maybe would have fired Mike Budenholzer.
Yeah.
That was definitely the implication. So what happens? They win the championship. And he gets an extension released at like 8 o'clock at night on a Friday or something. There was no pomp and circumstance around extending the championship coach. So I feel like the clock was ticking and it just was reset after the title.
Sure.
And even though Mark Lazary is no longer an owner of the team, he's no longer the governor of the team, I don't think that was another reset. I think there was always just something there that, at that level, they were aware of, paying attention to, whatever. And I think just 2 years in a row where you win a championship and then you're out in the second round and then you're out in the first round, like you're descending,
mm-hmm, for sure,
with a team whose collective age is ascending. Like it's the wrong...
As they all do.
It's
but
the
yes.
wrong graph, right? Like it's the wrong intersection. So I feel like, and yes, there are very basketball-y reasons. Chris gets hurt. Giannis misses 3 games. Like, that's a big deal. If Giannis is healthy, I think, we're talking about round 2 with the Knicks. But it didn't happen. So the roster can't change. I think there's also an element of, well, you can't fire the players. And while there may be a basketball discussion about signing and trading Chris Middleton, that's not a good basketball discussion. Like, he's got to be back. So if you can't, if everything's got to come back, but everything has led to worse performances. Like, what can you change that doesn't affect the roster? What can you change that doesn't affect the luxury tax or any of these other things? And quite frankly, it's the coaches. So I think that's a long way to say, like, why this happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's, he didn't call timeout or it's Jimmy Butler scored 300 points. Like, I think it's a broader part of it. It's just that when those things happen and it's so in your face, it's just, okay, some decisions got to be made.
Yeah, Lori. Go ahead, Lori. I'll just let you riff.
I just had a question, actually, Because I had always wondered. I saw those reports initially. I think it was in before 2021, yeah. right? And but they weren't widely circulated. It was like
it was a little quiet.
It was kind of quiet, and it was Buck. You know, Bud's on the hot seat. Yeah. If he doesn't win a championship, he's out. And we all kind of went, really? That's an... So it sounds like there was some legitimacy to yeah. those. And what I want to ask you is, I never had a chance to ask Mike Budenholzer myself. I always wanted to. Hey, did you hear this? Did you know this? How did you feel about it? How did it change your approach to work? Did you ever have any discussions? Or you're around him all the time. You never miss anything. Was there any reference? Did he come back to that in the summer or the off season or... And, you know, a casual practice like, hey, you know, I just wondered if there was anything, acknowledgement on his end that he knew.
Never on his end. I mean, Bobby mentioned it sort of in passing once. Actually, it was
Bobby
in.
Portis.
Yeah. In that. And I think because Bobby pays attention to everything.
Mm-hmm. He does.
So he probably saw. And all those reports came out after they lost by 40 in Brooklyn. And down 0-2.
Oh,
and then it's not right. hard. I'll be honest. Like, it's not hard to do a timeline of, oh, this came out in game two in Brooklyn. They win a title. And Mark goes on a podcast that says, I went down in the locker room in game two in Brooklyn. And, like, I mean, one and one probably equals two. But then he gets an extension. And, you know, Mark extolled his virtues about him handling the pressure and doing all these things and why they extended him and whatever. So...
Mark Lazary.
Yeah, Mark Lazary. So
I know you're on a first name basis with everybody.
It's so, yeah. I never addressed that, but I definitely think the team had. I mean, they're all hyper aware. They're all on their phones. Okay. They all see that stuff. Yeah. So I'm sure someone around Budenholzer saw it, but I don't think he ever functioned in that space with us. Like, I don't think he ever, like, if he saw it or heard it, He always struck me as a guy who it didn't ever seep in.
I just think it's interesting because I didn't have anybody, a source, tell me anything on the record, but we had kind of heard some of that's not necessarily true. He wasn't necessarily on the hot seat then. And so I just thought it was interesting. You know,
I think both can be true. Because I
How
think
can both
I,
be true?
Well, here, look, because there's a power structure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason why there was not a Mike Budenholzer's on the hot seat line of rumors through the entire season when they win 58 games. And there wasn't they got to get the one seed and they got to do this. You never heard any of that. You didn't hear any of this before this playoff started. So I feel like there are some people in the organization who had no intention of making this move.
Mm.
And then... I think there were people who had every intention of making this move. Mm, and at the end of it, there's only a couple of voices that truly matter.
And plus, we were all locked out. I mean, we didn't get to see a game in person until February of 2021. So it's not like we had normal access that we normally would.
Right.
And it
so
was all Zoom.
From the bubble into even the championship season.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just a very... You know,
couldn't have any side conversations with
right.
anybody at any point of, hey, what do you think about this? So, okay.
And so
thank you.
That brings me kind of to my next question. You know, the what's curious about this is, you know, Mike Budenholzer has been criticized for doing some of the things that he struggled with early on in his coaching tenure in the playoffs, some of the habits he had, which all changed in 2021. Not all changed, but he definitely changed the way he coached, and that proved to be for the benefit. And so you hear kind of rumblings that maybe if they had lost to Brooklyn, that would have been the end of the line for him. But yet, you know, they survive, and he's got a lot to do with that. Like, he was a big player there. So it's interesting, A, that he sort of reverted in some ways to sticking with what he was comfortable with the drop defense, with kind of whatever resulted in teams being able to get hot from three. Like, these were the things that really were burning them in the playoffs beforehand. But, you know, hearing you speak, I am wondering— if they don't lose to the Heat, does this move get made? Does it get made if they lose to the Knicks in the next round? Does it happen if they don't get to the NBA Finals? Like, what was the breaking point? Was it because it seems a little weird to me if it was just they're living year to year, moment to moment. If he loses to Brooklyn, he's going to be gone. But they win the title, so he's coming back. Well, they lost to the Celtics, but it was competitive, so we'll do it one more time. Well, they lost in the first round, now he's gone. But if they had made it halfway through the playoffs, he'd be back. You know, like, that feels a little weird to me.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's true, though. I think... we're not having this conversation if they lose in the conference finals. I don't think.
Yeah, I don't.
Like,
I don't
the
think
only
so
thing. So when John Horst didn't say a whole lot when he met on a call with just a couple of reporters, but so all he kept going to was the season didn't end where we expected. I think it's – I don't think even sports owners – I mean, maybe Steinbrenner was the only one, George Steinbrenner, where it's like if you didn't win the World Series, that was enough to be fired, even if you got there. Mm-hmm. I don't think most sports owners are, like, firing people just because they didn't win – like, only one team ever wins. But I do think if they're in the conference finals or finals and don't win a trophy – I don't know if we have this conversation.
Yeah.
It just was – they're the third most expensive team in basketball, and you lost in the first round. Mm-hmm. Like, at some point, the people writing those checks are like, why did we do this? Like, why did this happen? And if it's injury or this, like, at some point, that's not good enough. Yeah, so I think I don't think we're having this conversation if we're – talking about a finals appearance.
Can I bother you with two more questions?
Yes, of course.
JR, give me the side eye, please. First of all, I knew when you bring up George Steinbrenner, I just see the Seinfeld fan in you, Jim. I just read right through that. But how much does Giannis Antetokounmpo play into this, though? Because there's a time ticking with him now, and there's a couple of timelines. First of all, how long can they keep him? How long is he at his peak? I mean, it's not. I think there would have been a question if they hadn't won it all this year. I just think that's a natural question.
Sure.
Giannis, are you happy with this? Giannis, do you like the adjustments? Do you like, you know, the coaching style? Do you? I wonder how much he factors in to all those decisions. I thought you did a good job getting what you could out of John Horst, but he really wasn't going to be forthcoming with some of those specifics, I'm sure.
But Giannis has been forthcoming. Like, his comments after the loss, just about...
Fascinating, right?
Rare window into, like, yeah, we should have adjusted. We didn't adjust. Yes, I would have liked to have guarded Jimmy Butler. And you articulated that at jsonline.com in your story. That's kind of a rare window. Like, I don't know if dissension's probably too strong, but I don't know. Giannis never talks about coaches like that.
Right.
Look, he's... From my understanding, like, he's not LeBron James, right? Where LeBron James fires David Blatt in the middle of that season, hires Ty Lue, and they win a title.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
of course, LeBron has earned that. I mean, right? At this
stage. And we could argue Giannis has earned that. Like, and look, there are players who don't have LeBron status who also make moves like that with their coaches, like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving.
For sure.
Right? They came in, Kenny Atkinson probably should have stayed the coach, and they're like, nah, we want Steve Nash. And so in that context, Giannis has earned every bit of conversation he's in. I don't believe that he said a coaching change had to be made. I firmly believe he knows what's happening, and I don't think John Horst or ownership would have been, Giannis, like, is this cool? This is what we want to do. And if he, you know, stomped his feet and said, no, Bud's the guy, like, this still happens. I'm not saying, I just feel like he's involved in the conversation.
Sure.
To what degree? I don't know. I know he publicly, I asked him, you know, do you tell John guys you want signed? And he says, no, I don't get in that business. Well, but it was also widely reported before the Supermax, he wanted assurances of things. Now, did he say get Drew Holiday? Maybe not that specific.
There was the other guy, too, that there was the tampering thing. But who was that?
Bogdanovich.
Yeah,
so, like, was it that specific of a player name? I don't know. But he clearly is involved in some fashion, which he should be. He's earned that, right? That's how basketball teams move. So, yeah, Laurie, I think definitely aware. And then in terms of the timeline, that's all part of it. You know, he's 2 years of team control is the way I phrase it. You know, the option's kind of whatever.
Yeah, detail that for us, please.
So
I need clarity on this for the stress management of my life.
So very quickly, he's under contract for this season, 23-24. He's under contract for 24-25. And then there's a player option. Players never pick up options. That's just a way for it to say, hey, $500 million over 5 years. Well, no one ever sees the fifth year. It's just a mechanism, that will allow him to stay. Now, it's a good one for the Bucks, because at that point he could opt out, extend on it, et cetera, et cetera. But it's really 2 years of team control, and it in the basketball world, it's just one. Because at this offseason, this summer, or this season, the Bucks have to decide, Giannis has to decide, you know, how am I feeling about this? And then you get into either the Kareem conversation, like do you have to do the trade when he's got 1 year left plus an option, or you do what, you know, Oklahoma City did with Kevin Durant, where you say, nope, we're just going to rock with it until the contract's up and we see what happens. So he's got 2 years under team control, and I don't really think there's – it's not worth worrying so much about Giannis, so to speak.
Yeah. Laura, what do you think?
I want to ask you both a question, too.
This is a good recurring bit. I'm a fan
JR.
Of this. No, do it. What you got?
Weird thing, weird observation. Did you guys notice, and I don't think it matters, and I don't want to overanalyze it, but just so I want your thoughts. Did you see any – once Mike Budenholzer was fired, under the extremely difficult situations, too, where he lost his brother in a car accident, so it was a horrible week, I didn't see any posts or anything of support or anything either way from any members of the Bucks, and I thought – I didn't want to overanalyze it. I wondered what if you noticed that or if I missed something and if you had any thoughts on that.
I did not notice it, but that is becoming a bit of a trend because I don't want to speak for like the whole organization. I'm sure there's a lot of really good people in this organization, but with the Hall of Fame thing, it was a little weird that they just did not acknowledge. They had three coaches going into the Hall of Fame at the same time. They have 16 coaches in their history. One of them, Don Nelson, is already a Hall of Famer. Three dudes just went into the Hall of Fame all at the same time, and they really were weak on, like, they didn't bring these guys back. They didn't really commemorate them. There was maybe a tweet. I'm not sure if there was even a tweet. Del Harris, Larry Costello, George Carl. That's an incredible...
Yeah, the tweet came later after...
pointed it out. I mean, that's a huge chunk of your history. And, you know, maybe they're just not paying attention to that. They're focused on the current season. I don't know, whatever. But,
that
seemed weird to me.
Yeah, Lori, I did notice it. I don't know what it means. But, yeah, I noticed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mike Budenholzer seems like, to me, and I don't know him at all. I don't think anybody really knows him at all. He just seems extremely professional. I think if, you know, going back to that question of would he have talked about seeing these rumors or whatever, I think he would have said that just comes with the territory. That's being a basketball coach. He learned under, you know, Greg Popovich, who's also extremely professional.
Yeah.
Just don't get on his bad side. I think, I just don't think he's necessarily a warm and fuzzy guy. So he probably isn't like.
Yeah. I can see some of that, too, where there wasn't a effort because maybe it was. I don't know if you do things just for perception or you do things because you think that person needs it, wants it, et cetera.
Or out of sincerity, but yeah.
Well, there's that too.
Okay. So this brings me to my next question. Okay, so we've sort of established that if there are faults here that got him fired, it's purely playoff, and I don't think that's even a secret. Like, clearly they underachieved in the playoffs, so he's out because he couldn't adjust in the playoffs or couldn't get it done in the playoffs, but he did adjust. They did win a title. That was 2 years ago. There is reason to believe that could happen again. And I'm sure they don't agree with that or they wouldn't have moved on here. But are we sure that there's a better option out there? There's a lot of people clamoring for Nick Nurse. He was just fired from the Toronto Raptors. I mean, maybe he is a better coach. I don't know. But I don't even know tactically X's and O's if we can even answer that question because it's just going to be based on the personnel that they have. But are we sure there are better guys out there? I can't give you a long list of those names.
Shaka Smart.
Oh, Shaka Smart. I'm into that.
Hashtag
Let's
done
do that.
Deal too.
Done deal too. Let's go. Let's go.
Wait,
all
what
synergy
did you say?
All the
hashtag
time.
Hashtag what?
Done deal too.
Oh.
I love it.
That guy ended up being right like a decade later.
He was not wrong just early. There is value
exactly.
in that. Not wrong just early.
Look, this is a great question because the goalpost. Now, and you mentioned Nick Nurse, which is also part of this. The conversation of better and the. Has really shifted. I mean, if the standard for the Milwaukee Bucks is to win 70% of your regular season games, which is Hall of Fame level, win a championship in 5 years, which I believe only a dozen teams have won a title in the last 20 to 25. So, like, for all the talk of parity, like, there isn't much. That's a really high standard.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, it's really clear that you have to, if not win the championship in 23-24, like, get there.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of teams like to say, we play to win championships. I would say maybe, like, five in every league actually can do that.
Mm-hmm.
The Bucks, I do believe, are in the conversation. Even if everyone comes back and they're a year older, I would still say they're probably behind Boston as... You know, if Harden, you know, they'd be in that top mix to go, right? They'd be a favorite, but not the favorite. That's That's a lot. That's heavy. And it's not just Mike Budenholzer. Nick Nurse, yes, 5 years, won a title, he's out. Frank Vogel wins a title in L.A., he's out. Ty Lue, who we mentioned in Cleveland,
he's gone.
He gets fired in Cleveland. Like, so of the handful of coaches who've won a championship, three are currently on the market. They've won them in the last 5-6 years. You know, Ty Lue either appears frustrated in L.A. or they're frustrated with him, one or the other. So who's better? I mean, that's, I guess, John Horst's job.
Yeah.
And why he's paid what he's paid, I don't know. All I'll say is this. There's a thought, and my leaning is, oh, someone who's been in the chair, like a head coach experience, right? Whether they've won or not, it's being the face of an organization, answering questions, being able to handle that pressure, if you will. But there's a theme here. Nick Nurse was a first-year head coach and won a title. Ty Lue was a first-year head coach, won a title. Steve Kerr was a first-year head coach, won a title. So what I will say is for fans who are like, Frank Vogel or Nick Nurse have to be it because they're the only ones out there with a ring. Like, recent history shows you don't necessarily have to have that. So it's that person, right? And yeah, right, Jared. I mean, basketball, they all run the same stuff. This isn't football. Like, it's all basically the same. And so, yes, there's going to be some X's and O's and some of that other stuff like that. But look, even Doc Rivers and Steph Curry called a timeout when he didn't have one. And if it goes the wrong way, like, they're not going.
Right.
He's an all-timer. Like, that stuff happens. So I feel like they need to find the right person who can sort of connect with the locker room, handle that pressure. To me, is more than just you know, they have experience doing it. So that's why I feel like the search should be pretty wide, because to me, that's, you need to go a little deeper on your interviews as opposed to just, can you run an out of bounds play? Would you call timeout with 9 seconds left? Would you have taken Brooke Lopez? Like, I think you got to go beyond that.
Yeah, go ahead, Laura.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Just chime in.
So the Bucks had, I keep saying this and I keep wanting to get to this story, and I thought we were going to have all this time. The Bucks had this huge assistant coaching staff. So if the premise is that they trust somebody young enough, you know, young and ready to go, is it Charles Lee? Is that he's the best assistant on the staff for the Bucks staff? And or is there a top first assistant out there in the league that would be coveted? You know, like, to me, if they go young, it would have to be somebody that they already know through other sources or whatever that Giannis.
Does it have to be young?
Well, I mean, young, like younger than Bud.
Yeah.
You know.
But Bud's actually kind of young.
Yeah.
He's
median, if nothing else.
I mean,
you know, Udoka, he's at Houston, right?
Yeah,
he took that job. So I'm just trying to think.
Late 30s, 40s.
Yeah,
if we're naming names, there aren't many names to name.
There aren't.
No.
That's why I'm saying maybe there's an unnamed, unless there's some college phenom.
And that's hard. I don't, wow. See, college is the one area I'm not sure.
It doesn't translate well. Right.
This is not a team.
Exactly.
And that's the thing where I mention being able to connect with the players and get the locker room. Because even if Wesley Matthews and Jay Crowder and Goran Dragic are gone, whoever they bring in, just by salary wise, are older players willing to sign for 1 year. So you're talking about, and your best players next year, like Bobby, Giannis, and Grayson, will turn 29 during the season, and they're your youngest players. So you're talking about grown professionals. So, like, I don't think there's room for, and I'm not saying Jay Wright, for instance, would be like a rah-rah college person, but, like, I don't know if that group is in a space to experiment with something so unknown. Now you mentioned an assistant. I don't know. Maybe Charles Lee's that guy.
Maybe.
I honestly don't know. That's the thing with college, or to me, basketball assistants, Lori, that's just such a mystery compared to football. Because, like, football, like, coordinators, they speak, they're out there, you can pull up clips, they do interviews, you know their schemes and systems. Like, you literally can see what they draw up in real time.
And they have very niche roles. You know,
very niche roles. Whereas I have no idea, like, what Ty Lue was doing in Cleveland that made LeBron want to make that move, but it clearly was the right one.
Like Becky Hammon is the biggest name.
Let's touch on third rail. We got to talk about Becky Hammon. Like
she's 46.
So yeah, so yeah, she
I just looked it up.
you know, she won a title with the Las Vegas Aces. From my understanding, a lot of superstars on that team that she had to manage. obviously, an assistant coach in San Antonio for forever. She interviewed here twice for two different jobs.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if she could walk in the room and command the locker room and they buy in. Like, I don't, you know, I think it could be anybody in that sense. I think we just don't know. Basketball doesn't allow itself for knowing that.
Which to me makes it the timing a little puzzling in that they didn't have somebody lined up. They just fired him because they weren't satisfied with five playoff years, three number one seeds, an NBA championship. Like, they didn't have somebody like, we have a better idea of where we want to go, because that person would already be hired. So now the search has begun, and maybe that's naive. Like, maybe the search began.
No, basketball, you can do that. So, again, for fans who maybe listen to the Packers podcast, like, there are no Rooney Rule type situations. Like, basketball is a much better sport at hiring diverse candidates. so there's no timeline, and you must interview X amount of people from a variety of backgrounds. Like, that's not – they literally could have fired Mike Budenholzer on a Thursday at 5 and had a Friday morning press conference with someone else. They definitely could have. But I think some of these things we're touching on, which is the locker room space, who their roster is, and what – like, they're not – the players aren't going to pick the coach, but they've got it. Like, so Giannis especially has to be in. And I don't know the timing of that. Like, some of these guys are just like, look, man, I got to go – I got to be gone for 2 weeks. And I'll catch you whenever for the magical breakfast or dinner, you know, where they all come together and figure it out. So, yeah, JR, I think they're gonna have a wide ranging search.
Well, but how, if you're the coach though, or if you're interviewing for this job, don't you have to know who's coming back though for sure? The change, the potential turnover for this season. You said that Middleton pretty much has to come back.
And so does Lopez.
Like, you think that's going to happen?
Yeah.
You would, okay.
Well, I mean, you got to allow for the percentage because they are free agents. But I would put like 98% for Brook Lopez and like 97% for Chris Middleton.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have done that, but I wouldn't. Yeah. But also, it seems to me from what you've written, like, they can do that. Bring those guys back, because 2024, no matter what, is their last chance to really like win a title with this group. Like, after that, it gets so murky.
It gets
harder, you talked about Giannis.
Yeah.
So, like, bring them back, because if you lose them, you're not going to get anybody of like value back in any sort of exchange. So just play for 2024 and worry about the consequences later, right?
Yeah. So just real, we're not going to bog people down on CBA stuff. But basically, like, you know, I know Bucks fans. Chris Middleton's not a $30 million player, $40 million player. Okay, whatever. The thing is, the Bucks can pay him that. And someone out, like San Antonio, can pay him that, right? Because they got cap space. If Chris leaves, the Bucks don't have $30 million. They've got four to fill eight roster spots, like, under the tax. So, like, they can sign Brook for $18 million a year. If he leaves, they cannot sign anyone else for $18 million. Like, the NBA is so weird in that they will allow a team to spend above the cap to re-sign their own player. And the moment they do, they are immediately penalized for it by being taxed. So, like, you're not going to get a three-time All-Star, 20-point-a-game scorer. You're not going to get a defensive player of your candidate. Like, it's just – it's not possible. So it is in their best interest to re-sign those guys. I think the negotiation is, well, Brooke, you're going to be 35 – you want to play four more years? Well, seven-footers at 39 have this. So, like, there's a negotiation. Chris, the extent of the knee injury, the Bucks know that best. At some point, other teams will need to know his medical.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, do you want to wait till July 1st and have that out there? And then
that's a good point.
Or you can take this now. And so there's a room for negotiation there. And that's why I have to leave the little bit of a percentage, because it isn't just, you know, a team option where they're coming back no matter what. But I do feel like if the Bucks want to win a title, even a sign and trade for Chris, teams can get in the fans can get in the cap machine, trade machine, like a bunch. Let Dallas, I think Tim Hardaway Jr. Is Tim Hardaway Jr. and some other guy gonna do this for you? No.
Tim Hardaway Jr. is a guy that Giannis jumps over.
Yeah. So that's the thing. And like, oh, there's like a bunch of 23-year-olds. You can squish a bunch of salaries together. Again, Drew Holiday, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Grayson Allen, Pat. Like,
yeah.
Like, is that happening? Like, not. Probably not. In terms of winning the championship, which is what this is all about. This is why the coach was fired.
In that scenario, I just think, to go back to Becky Hammond, I'd be electric if they hired her. Because right now, if I'm looking at this as a Bucks fan, I am not interested in any NBA basketball for the next 12 months. I know that they're a good team and they're going to make the playoffs at some point. I don't care if they're
the one seed, two seed, or three seed.
Yeah. So either they do those things or it's morbidly disappointing. So why would I even like bother with that with the regular season? And then it all starts again in the playoffs. That's the only thing that can satisfy a Bucks fan right now. You add Becky Hammond, that's a layer of electricity that you wouldn't otherwise have in the regular season. And if all these guys are back, you know,
they're going to win.
Yeah, right. Like there's, like you said, anybody could do this. And I don't want to like undermine her, you know, ability to do it. Like she's proven it over and over again. It would be a landmark moment in NBA history, and it would be cool to be in Milwaukee, and it would definitely add a layer of interest that might not be there for the regular season. I would love it if they hired her. That'd be really cool.
There's always the caveat, right? If Giannis plays his 65 games, and if Chris plays his 65 games, he might be at that point now. I don't know. Brooke will play 80. Drew will play 75. Like, the nature of the regular season and how great Giannis. Well, Giannis probably wants to win MVP, so he'll play like 66 games because he has to. Like, they're gonna be a top three seed, and that's where maybe the focus changes. Where like this year they push for the one. The last couple of years they were just like, just stay out of the four, you know. So like, yeah, you can win, and the win totals, if people look, are going down. So it's not even you have to win 54 games to be a three seed. Like, you can win 48.
Yeah.
And be
well, and heck, who needs to be top three? The Lakers are a serious threat right now to win the NBA title.
Right.
I mean, the Bucks didn't win at home. What do they need home court advantage for? They lost two or three at home.
So there is an element of that where there is some baked in success, health, provided health.
Mm-hmm.
That's a benefit to having a team like this. Where if you do pick an assistant, no one knows who's a first time head coach, or Becky Hammond, who would be a first-time NBA head coach, the floor is much, much higher than Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, where you're really, I think, having to work to scrape out some wins.
It is so weird that Charles Lee has been named as a finalist candidate for all these other jobs. And what do we know about him? He's been in Milwaukee for all these years. We assume he's great because everybody loves him. And since assistants aren't readily made available to media members, we don't even know what he does.
Not even readily, like never.
Never made available.
Never.
And we've asked.
Yeah.
So Bucks fans are like, why haven't you done anything? Well, guess what? I've asked 400 times. Okay? So
I mean, he's just a character in Hamilton, and it's a meme I keep bringing up. But like, that's the extent we know. If they promote Charles Lee, it's a good line from Hamilton.
That's what it feels like right now.
I want to go back to the ownership situation, because we knew optically that no matter what happened, Jimmy Haslam would be seen as, oh, they just brought in a new owner and now they fired their head coach. This is clearly the new owner trying to, you know, exert some sort of will. I mean, we've talked about that. I definitely don't buy into that. I think that whatever – I think the ball was already rolling down the hill. But – you know, now I'm kind of revisiting Mark Lazary leaving. Like, did he know something? And, you know, he didn't know they were going to lose in five games.
Are you trying to talk about thunderclouds here?
Yeah. I'm just trying. I mean, you know, it speaks to the luxury tax. It speaks to where perhaps he thought this franchise was ultimately heading, if it had hit its ceiling in terms of value. And maybe this is him saying, I mean, even if they win, like, it's all, you know, it's coming to an end very soon. So, and then now having Jimmy Haslam suggest that they could go deeper into the luxury tax because they now have theoretically deeper pockets to do so. And that would speak to your idea of bringing everybody back at least for the short term to see if you can do this again in 2024. But I don't know. I've got thoughts, or I shouldn't say thoughts. I've just questions, wondering like, huh, the timing is sure interesting. Mm-hmm. It seems
so. Mm-hmm. So
Thundercloud. What?
Thundercloud.
Yeah, there was a national talking person who asked that exact same question. Like, why would Mark Lazary left a while ago, so I find it interesting that it sort of pops up again after the season. I mean, in a grand scheme of things, a co-ownership change and I had coaching changes, a massive change in a franchises. Like, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. So I'm not underscoring that. I think timing, Mark Lazary made almost $700 million in 9 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
It's typical hedge fund behavior to walk away after you've made your millions.
And he even told me for our story at jsonline.com, he's like, we'll find out in 5 years if this was smart. Because they've got a media rights deal that comes up in 24, 25. That is why, like, the NBA is pushing for $100 billion with a B. Maybe it's less than that. But, like, Wes Edens could sell in 2 years his share for $1.1 billion. Whereas Mark sold it for $800 something million. Yeah. Like, these values keep going up. So in terms of timing, yeah, like, somebody wired him $800 million. That's pretty good timing.
No matter when, it's good timing.
Now, there is, Lori asked about the Giannis contract thing. The CBA, the new CBA prevents ownership now from fire hosing cash at their problems.
Mm-hmm.
Like Steve Ballmer and Joe Lacob, the Bucks ownership group, again, third most expensive team in basketball. If you were willing to pay the tax, that's all it was. You were just paying the tax. Going forward, there are now roster building problems here.
Yeah.
So Jimmy Haslam and Wes Edens and Jamie Dimon can say, we will gladly write $800 million checks all year long. However, John Horst would say, that's great. Problem is, we can only have like four guys and a bunch of G Leaguers because the league changed the rules. Like, that's no one's, this is, I normally don't really care about ownerships and things, but it literally wouldn't be their fault. Like, when the Bucks are bad in a couple years, because they are going to have to be, like, that's not ownership's fault. That was, now, it's ownership's fault in that other owners wanted this to prevent other owners from spending more money and making people look bad, and players wanted this. So they agreed to this, that basically going forward, teams can be good for like five-year windows, essentially. Maybe a little longer if they get lucky and like picks are staggered and guys develop at different rates. But ownership, yeah, I think it's I don't know, JR, if like I other than that ball already rolling for Mike, I don't think this like Mark Lazary selling. Actually, if anything, I thought maybe that would have saved Bud's job.
Sure.
How?
Well, because Mark was the governor and had the issues in Brooklyn, right?
And the new owner maybe not wanting to rock the boat and just stick with what's working for now.
Right. So we'll see. I mean, Wes Edens is the governor. Jimmy Haslam has a say, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess we'll know more if Chris and Brooke aren't back and they slide under the tax.
Yeah.
And it's just Giannis, Drew, and a cast of characters. Like, that'll be a bigger emphasis. But, I mean, for whatever it's worth, they're on the record saying, we want to win.
Yeah.
And that's, you know.
So you're saying, though, the way the system is now is you are set up for failure at some point.
Yes.
You can't go through a decade being a dynasty or a semi-dynasty every other year champion contender. At some point, you have to pay the piper.
Yes.
And
unless your own players don't age.
Yes, and that is you could, in terms of paying the piper. So, like, let's say, fantasy world, Drew, Chris, and Brooke and Giannis all age gracefully into like their late 30s. Now, let's say they all sign like 6 year contracts.
Mm-hmm.
The Bucks and that supermax out the wazoo, right? And repeater taxes, and the Bucks say, "Yep, we're paying it." It's like a $800 million payroll. Totally fine. They can do that. However, John Horst will have only first round picks at number 30 that he cannot trade. They would not be able to, if they wanted to trade, say, Pat Connaughton, they could only trade him for someone who makes the same amount of money as him. Mm-hmm. When you say, well, that's a big deal. Well, look, I mean, then why are you trading Pat Connaughton, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're essentially swapping the same person out for the same money. You cannot have, there's other, you cannot sign a buyout player who made certain amount of money before. Like, you can sign a Javon Carter, but maybe not someone else. So, like, your whole roster is drastically affected by these new rules really beginning in 2 years.
So why would Giannis stay here? I'm sorry, based on what you're saying, and it makes sense. I don't see him staying at all. Now I see why coastal teams are so thirsty in the media.
But this also loops back, though, to who the head coach is, which I think will be a big deal. Mm-hmm. But also, this affects all teams. So as we say this, I mean, you can almost take Golden State and LA Clippers off the books, right, in terms of being able to afford anyone in 2 years.
Yeah.
Because first of all, Giannis is going to make $60 million a year. So there's still that part of it. Of that other team needs to have that space, which means they have like three people on their roster. And then, okay, so now you sign Giannis for $60 million. Chances are you're going to be in the tax. And if you weren't in the tax like 2-3 years prior, maybe that's okay.
Yeah.
But if you were, well,
the repeater that,
now you're in the repeater again, and that team's in the same boat. So it'll be really interesting, Lori, to see. Like, oh, yes, you're going to hear it's already starting. Oh, the Knicks have all this money. The Knicks have all these picks. Well, guess what? If the Knicks go to the conference finals, are they really going to be able to sit in New York, be like, nope, we're not doing anything with this team. We're going to wait 2 years.
Yeah.
That's not happening. New York's going to have to spend some money and keep that ball rolling, right? So it's really, I think the coach will matter. I think if they win a title or two in these next 2 years, that will matter for Giannis. But I think it's going to affect a lot of teams. And, JR, right, it's the repeater. And it's being in it 3 out of 4 years or 4 out of 5 years. And there's a lot of, like, math that I'm not really excited about learning. But people are going to have to do it. And, yeah, Laura, you're right. Teams are going to set themselves up. We're going to sign this guy, you know. But I think there's going to be way more considerations for players like that who want to win. And maybe, who knows, maybe at that point he'll have made, like, any player would have made his money and been like, well, I'll go and leave and sign there for $30 million to make it work, you know, and take such a drastic pay cut. But again, like, why would you do that?
Nobody does that.
Nobody does that.
Portis.
Yeah. Tax aprons and repeater penalties, and it is complicated. But spiritually, it's similar to what's happening in the NFL, which is, of course, a hard cap versus a soft cap. And teams just can't be good forever. You just can't be. You cannot retain the talent and expect to. You just can't. You're going to end up.
Baseball is the only sport really that allows for.
Yep.
For
no salary cap at all.
With no salary cap at all.
Yep. Some luxury tax stuff, but it is all financial. There's no. Nothing like this.
Under the old system, the Bucks, I would argue, would have been in great shape having Jimmy Haslam.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because if we're still working on some stuff. We'll write about the Haslam Sports Group soon, but they spend their money.
Yeah.
I mean, results aside, like, I think under the old system, it probably would have been good for the Bucks. Now we'll see.
So I'll because I don't want to quite get off the topic of Mike Budenholzer just yet. You did mention, Lori, the accident that killed his brother very tragically. And we don't actually know a ton of details on that, but we know enough that at some point during the finals he lost a family member, presumably a close family member. We don't really even know how close or anything like that, but we know that he was going through some stuff. And so I wonder, optically, should they have waited if they didn't have somebody lined up? Like, I think probably a week is okay. I don't think people are going to remember this as the Bucks being ultra callous, but it does speak to the seemingly, I don't know, read between the lines, chilly relationship that they didn't, like, say, thank you, bud, farewell, bud. You know, it was just very much, you're out. That it was a tough situation for anybody to be in, but it's also just really sticky stuff. I mean, that was going on. So Lori, what do you think? Do you think that more allowance should have been made for that, or that's just pro sports? We can't expect sentiment to really play a role really anywhere.
No, you can always be take the high road and be a good human, and I don't care what business you're in. I would hope and I would expect that there was some consultation with Mike Budenholzer for everything he's done to say, you know, how do you want to handle this? You know, we have different ideas. And if Budenholzer said, you know, just make the announcement, let me get on with my life, which kind of is his personality, I would hope there was some discussion there, because, you know, for whatever fans feel about him or whatever, he did a lot of remarkable things for this franchise and built the winning culture here with the right people, with an amazing locker room. I mean, the high character in that locker room is pretty unique in my career that spans three decades. I think that, you know, it's been a good relationship with everybody. So it's an impossible situation and a horrible tragedy. I don't know which brother he lost. We're very sorry for him, too, and his family. So I don't think there's any right way to do that, you know, a week, 2 weeks, 2 years. It doesn't matter. It's a horrible tragedy. Yeah. I just hope that the way the Bucks announced it and the very quiet manner in which they did it was to honor
his
Budenholzer. Yes, exactly. And I would hope that there was some sensitivity towards that. And Mike is not the kind of guy who wants to be the center of attention. He's never been that kind of coach. He's always wanted to put the focus on his team anyway. And now that he's grieving, I'm hoping best case scenario, that's what happened.
Yeah. I and part of that too is, if they were going to make a move, to just sort of do it, because at some point the time off decompress ends and you start planning for the next year.
Yeah.
And so I think there was that, I'm sure, of, all right, we don't want, like, on a professional, like, we don't want him going down the line of reaching out to new assistants. Maybe his assistants will leave, hire this. Like, there's a process. So maybe, to Lori's point, this timed up personally. Like, the professional decision timed up with the personal.
I just want to know. I want to know what the players knew. I want to know when the players knew. You know, what did they know game four? Or, you know, certainly they probably knew game five. I just want to know if this affected the team. I can't imagine how it wouldn't.
That's if they knew. That's if he told them.
Right.
Because no one knew this until Darvin says it in this pro.
Right.
In this, and, yeah. And does Darvin even say it if they're still playing?
But how do you, as a head coach, you keep working. You have to be sleep deprived. You know, there has to be sleep deprivation. There's so many human emotional factors that play into this that get lost in the callous world that we are all working in. It's ridiculous to think that somebody who makes a certain amount of money can just plot, you know, work through that. Money has nothing to do with it, and yet money puts unreasonable expectations on both the coaches and the players. I'll always want to wonder, and when the timing's right, I want to revisit that whole Miami series and know. I want to know who knew what, when, and what kind of factor that played into it, because I don't necessarily, looking at Miami, even with a healthy Giannis and everything, I'm not sure. The Bucks looked pretty bad game one against Miami. There was something about that matchup that was tough from the beginning, but I really think the pandemic robbed this team, the Milwaukee Bucks team, of another championship. I just think that was unfortunate timing, and then when I hear about this tragedy, I can't see how it couldn't have strongly, adversely affected both Mike and possibly the players in some way. And I don't know how you keep that secret. I don't know how you keep that quiet, especially if Darvin knew about it. So,
I'll be honest. I used to think that the bubble cost them a championship or the pandemic, and this year was just as good as that year. You know, like it's really likely that things go differently in 2020 if there's no stoppage and bubble and whatever.
2022, I mean, even more.
Yeah, I just, like, this team was better than any of the other Bucks teams, and they laid an egg, man. So, like, now I'm questioning. You know, it used to be in the NBA, you could say, well, they're just too good for this to happen. And now everything's on the table. Like, they should have been just too good. You know, we talked about, yeah, they didn't have Giannis, but the whole point was this team was so much better than the Miami Heat and should have been able to win without Giannis, and they didn't, you know, they came close, but it was, you know, two collapses and two blowouts. Like, what? Yeah. That's so, so weird. And I just want to reiterate, you mentioned it, 69% winning percentage or 68 point something. Like, that's better than anybody else in Bucks history. He is the winningest, by percentage, best coach in Bucks history. Mm-hmm. Slightly better than Larry Costello, who does have a better playoff record, but only slightly. 5 years, 3-1 seeds, one championship, one, you know, taking a better seed to the absolute wire. He had an incredible career.
Yeah.
That is the stuff of Hall of Fame coaches. There is a really good chance, depending on maybe his next job, which if he wants to coach again, he's going to have a next job. He's probably going to be a Hall of Fame coach. Like, there's a lot of people in the Hall of Fame. Basketball Hall of Fame hands out Hall of Fame trophies to a lot of people. If Del Harris is in the Hall of Fame, Mike Budenholzer is going to be in the Hall of Fame. Love Del Harris. No shade. One of the three former Bucks coaches inducted in 2022. But they're getting rid of a guy who's a Hall of Fame caliber coach, even though I know people don't feel that way. He is. And
that's dumb. That's, people should recognize what he has done.
Yep. You know? It's risky, and it sounds a little desperate, but they got one more year, you know? After that, it's over. So maybe desperate is right. Maybe that's the right reaction, too. I don't know. I'm just rambling now. I don't have maybe another question.
No, you're not. It's good. It's a good stream of consciousness because we don't have the answers. We don't really know. And we probably never really will get the answer of, you know, was it the playoff losses that really cost him? Or was it, you know, a systemic thing that a philosophy that they didn't like about him or that the players tuned him out, whether it was – I mean, they had offensive struggles earlier in the season. They had defensive struggles later in the season. Was it something else that clashed all along that losing in the first round was just a convenient excuse to say, okay, it's time for us to move on? That's what it feels more like to me, despite what Mr. Horst says, my instinct.
And, yeah, it could be, you know, like in football, it took Mike McCarthy – 12 years for all that? How long for all that to happen? And maybe in basketball, it's just now it's 5.
Faster. Things burn faster, yeah. Smaller rosters. Everything goes faster. Who do you guys think is going to be the next head coach? Who do we got?
You need to pay attention to the NBA year-round, though, JR. This is better. All the all the TV shows you watch and the movies, and you're such an expert on, you can't beat this drama. This is real-life stuff.
It's true.
Jim and I are trying to plan our lives for the next year, and just forget it.
I got baseball.
So come with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So. There's drama in baseball, too. It's a slower burn. It's a long-form podcast, but it does numbers.
So I want you to come to our side this is the best game. Game in the whole world.
I really don't know. I think the type of coach they'll settle on is going to be unlike Mike Budenholzer.
Of course, I agree with that.
What I mean by that is it's not the X's and O's, and even if it's an assistant, and then people rant and rave about it, and they don't really know.
It's a culture person.
Yes, I think this. I think we can say this will be what I think. Like in football, where you go from the yelly, screamy tyrant to the player friendly or the vice versa. Like, I think because I think this person might have a better command of the podium, of the press conference room, of the.
I'm not mocking you, but that doesn't do anything.
In basketball, I think there's. And what I mean where that's going to translate is I think there's going to be a different locker room vibe and a different way that person connects
like a Jason
with the
Kidd,
players.
Like there's a presence when he walks
in the
room.
What have you done?
I think Kidd was like the yelly, screamy guy.
No, but I mean, but what you're talking about is this commanding presence of somebody at the podium who's like
but not
large
an
and
intimidator.
In
no, I think
like
it's
an
more,
Eric Spoelstra. He's my
I got a guy who fits this.
Okay,
Doc Rivers.
I mean Doc. I think fits in that category.
Yeah.
Of that person where if you walk in the locker room, like, you can kind of wrap your arms around people. Like, it's obviously there's a coaching and an accountability dynamic, but I that's why I mean the departure. I think it's more of that type of personality. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see. I think all these – let's be honest. If you're head coach in the NBA, you handle the X's and O's. Like, that's – like, there's no head coach that can't draw plays and like call timeouts and run a practice and all that stuff. So I think it's going to be this more of this intangible type thing. That's my gut. And who that is, I think that could be anybody. I think that's why it might take a little while for them to figure it out.
Yeah. Becky Hammon, I'd love to see that. Charles
why?
Lee, I'd be interested.
Why would you like Becky?
I think because it adds something that an electricity, like I said earlier, like there is going to be, I don't want to call it novelty because that could denigrate what she's capable of bringing to the table, but just, this is a fully formed team. Like you don't need somebody to reinvent the wheel. Bring in somebody that's gonna add a flavor that they've never had before, and try something brand new. And you know the tricky thing is there is a year beyond this next one could be a completely different shape, and might call for a completely different coach. Now I'm not saying you want to hire somebody for 1 year, but you also need to keep that in mind that at some point this person is going to have to lead a team that is no longer one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. So. Now it's sort of like do you just go for broke on 2024 and worry about everything else after that, or you know that's part of the element as well. I would like to see Charles Lee just because I think it's cool that he's been sought for so many years and now he might actually have a chance in Milwaukee to rise up to the head coaching level. But I'm with everybody else. I don't know anything about the guy, so like it's sort of just an idea more than a person, but more than a fit. But those would be two. I mean, Nick Nurse I think is. That's the odds-on favorite, I guess. I don't think that's that far-fetched. I mean, he fits the bill of kind of what, sort of in a vacuum you'd expect. So I think he's very different personality-wise from Mike Budenholzer. That's a total personality shift, but it might work. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's it, guys. Anything else? We could talk about exit interviews, I suppose, if people are really excited that the Bucks did not do those. So there weren't any sort of final.
So was this the first year that they didn't do it, Jim?
They didn't do it after the pandemic. Championship.
They didn't do it after
the title. Well, they did some last year. I don't know about. I'm guessing the bubble. They didn't.
Yeah.
Those exit interviews have becoming like in Green Bay too with the Packers, that used to be money. You'd have to hit that locker room and get as many people as possible, and you really got raw reaction still of like the last loss. But as time went by, you know, the last 10 years, it would be almost nobody would appear and want to talk anymore. So I don't know what we would get from exit interviews anymore anyway, unless
I mean the fact that Chris, Brooke, Grayson and Bobby all left without talking after game 5.
Oh, really? So
it would have been nice to hear from
COVID for the second time in 5 weeks. I wasn't there with me. Tell me who didn't talk again.
Those guys.
Brooke didn't talk?
Yeah, Brooke, Chris, Grayson, and Bobby. So three starters in your six.
I could see why Grayson wouldn't.
I mean, but they weren't there. So it would have been nice to have been, like, even if it was 3 days later.
Right.
To talk to them. Because, okay, the game ended 3 days before. But then there's still also like off-season stuff, like
for sure.
Chris, like Brooke's a free agent. Chris has an option. Like there's,
but I don't think they would say anything. They're too smart. They're not going to say anything.
I still got to ask though.
Yeah, no, I know you would get something. You would get something for sure.
So they don't. They just decided not.
Yeah,
to.
Yeah, I don't. So. I can see that though too.
We will have another episode of the Point Forward podcast when we know more about who the next head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks will be. We'll obviously be discussing that. I could see us coming back during the NBA Finals and just doing a check-in and talking about maybe the basketball scene at large and also any updates that we have on the personnel front on what's happening with Chris, with Brooke, with everyone else. Certainly, most of those moves will be in the offseason, but maybe not. We'll have some news, I'm sure, along the way. Unless there's any other thoughts from either one of you, thank you for joining me both in-house. It's Lori Nickel and Jim Ozarski of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You've been listening to the Point Forward podcast. We'll be back again very soon. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.